Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
It's only a kick. A jump. A block. It's only a serve. It's only a tackle. A run. It's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the we just hit a million orders stage. No matter what stage you're in, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/special offer, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/special offer.
What is good, everybody? Welcome back. Very special guest for you here today. I'm Rob Stats Guerrera. He is Thor Nystrom from Fantasy Pros. Thor, thank you so much for hopping on again. You joined us before the draft, and now I'm very excited to have you back to help us break everything down.
Thanks for having me, brother. And it feels like we manifested something in the galaxy, because one of my favorite players in the draft that I had as a first rounder, not a ton of other guys did, was a guy that the 49ers took in the first round, the end there. Ricky Pearsall, they saw him exactly like I did. So excited to talk about the whole class and Ricky and dive into it.
We'll get to Ricky in a second, because he was a very polarizing choice by the 49ers. But if you zoom out for a minute and just look at the class as a whole, what did this 49ers draft class tell you about how the 49ers view their roster?
Well, the obvious one at the top, we'll have to find out here in a little bit. There was all the rumors about the wide receiver trades. And I don't, you know, I don't cover the NFL. I cover college football and then the draft. So I wouldn't know any more about you would know way more about the status of Debo and Ayuk and all that sort of stuff. But I know that was a talking point. And then you take Pearsall, that I don't know if that's indicative of something or not. And then they were, you know, people have been asking me, you know, go on these spots, like, what's your dynasty rankings of these guys? What's your year one? And, you know, I go ballistic about Pearsall, but it's like, he probably needs one of those two guys to get traded. Cause if not, even being the third receiver out there, it's like, it's not just those two stud receivers, as you know, Rob, you also have one of the great pass catching tight ends that we've had in modern times. And you also have the best receiving back of we've had a modern time. So it's like a lot of mouths to feed, but that may or may not be indicative of something. I think that'd be something interesting to keep an eye on. And then they took a bunch of, I think they were looking for upside, you know, with the athletic profiles of the guys that they took. It would be the other thing that I think, you know, is in terms of that, but I like the class overall. And especially that first pick there.
You say you like the class overall, sir, but I have done my research and I can't help but notice a grade of C+ from Thor Nystrom on the 49ers draft class. How dare you, sir?
Yeah, the funny thing is, you look at everyone else's grading out there, that would be the worst grade that they give out. But I do it a little bit differently. I grade on a curve, a true curve, where it's all 32 teams stacked, and then we put it across the spectrum, which means in my grading every single year, you'll notice I have two A pluses, I have two Fs, and everyone is spread in between. So on my grading scale, whereas for anyone else, that would be their version of an F. For me, a C plus is actually above average for the NFL, in my opinion, of the class. So, you know, you'd be looking at, you know, me saying that's the 13th or 14th class that I like the most coming out in terms of how you did, how you played the ball where it lied on draft weekend.
So let's get to Pearsall now. Testing wise, he was phenomenal. I mean, ran a 4.41. Athletic score was, I think, 9.91, right? Just a phenomenal. Yes. But why didn't, if he's so athletic and so good at running routes, why didn't he produce more in college?
It's a weird thing where it's like he's a wide receiver one the last 3 years at the two different schools, including with two top five overall quarterbacks. But it's strange to say this, but he actually wasn't in the best passing environments, even though he was the wide receiver one for those teams. Because in 2021 at Arizona State with Jaden, that was the year that Jaden stunk. And there was a lot of other stuff going on and different stuff, outside of that. So, but he was terrible passing the ball that year, Jaden. And then that set him about his way. And then the next year, Pearsall was the wide receiver one for Richardson, who has all the great tools, but that season the accuracy wasn't there. And so were those, and then last year, Graham Mertz and their terrible offensive line. With Pearsall, I wanted so badly to see him in a situation where timing, rhythm, passing game, where the strengths of his game, the route running machinations, the efficiency of footwork, just all the cool things he does with the route running stuff, where it's a game that suggests that he would be a killer in a system like that. That system, rhythm, offensive system with an anticipatory thrower. You could argue that even though he has ascended immediately to wide receiver one duties on these, he hasn't played with a guy like that yet. Jaden might be that now. Jaden would tell you if he was sitting here in 2021, he was not that, right? And so that's, I wanted Pearsall to get into a situation like that. And obviously he has the hand, you know, outside of the route running, he's one of the better route runners in this class, but I don't know who challenges him for hands. He doesn't flub anything. And he has the most ludicrous reel of highlight catches, the last decade in college football. He's definitely made the best catch I've ever seen in college football, that catch against Charlotte. But I mean, he was on the SportsCenter top 10s consistently throughout his career. So and now you find that situation with the 49ers. The athleticism was proven as well. It's like he answered all, you know, however you want to say, check the boxes, close the doors. The eval was pretty tight there. And I think that this is a perfect situation for him.
Yeah, you're talking about anticipatory throwers. He's in the right spot for sure. Yes. We'll see how often he gets to contribute. I think part of this pick was for 2025, but also like, hey, Debo misses time every year. And so the Niners didn't want to have to depend on Juwan Jennings and Ronnie Bell as the 2 and 3 wide receivers. They also took Jacob Cowing later in the draft, who is small, but plays with a jetpack on his back. Can he contribute, or is he like, well, he's fast and Tank Dell is really good and small, so he's going to get the Tank Dell boost? Or is Jacob Cowing like actually a player?
I had the hardest time with Jacob Cowing in terms of like how I viewed him or ranked him, like because of my experience with him during his college career. When he was at UTEP earlier in his career, he destroyed that conference and he was winning at all three levels of the field, you know, even at his size. Right. And so like he, at that point in his career, he was like the Tank Dell of that level of the G5. Tank Dell was like a slightly higher version in the G5, you know, at Houston, the AAC, more the top of the G5. But then Cowing transfers to Arizona, and his ADOT plummeted. The last 2 years, it was down to 8.4 and 6.7, those ADOTs. The first 3 years when he was at UTEP, they were at 14.8 or higher each of those seasons. And he was on the field for those. Now, the role at Arizona, he was in this weird situation where they have this freak receiver, Tetaroa McMillan, who we will be talking about next year at this time because he's going to be a top 10 or top 12 type pick. you have him on the outside. So you have just this nasty boundary receiver. And then with Cowing, they wanted to switch his role to the you're the paper cut guy for us. Yep. You know, in the slot, we're just going to throw you the short stuff. No longer was Jacob Cowing allowed to go downfield and do that stuff like he was at UTEP. So that was like my supposition heading into draft season was like, I've seen this guy win downfield earlier in his career. He was at least good with the efficiency stuff the last couple of years at Arizona. It sort of handcuffed his, you know, overall skill set. But I, like I said, I'd seen that earlier. So I was pretty bullish when we went to, down to Mobile. That's where not only myself, other people got a little bit skittish. Like the people that entered more bullish on Cowing cuts, you see him going up against, you know, the best of the best cornerbacks that they had down there. And it just wasn't the week that we were hoping to see from him. I remember one rep where Cam Hart, that enormous Notre Dame cornerback, where he was like staying in Cowing's pocket across the form, you know, the formation on his route. He was getting pushed around at the line. And then this culminated in on the Thursday, he gets injured. He has the jets. We've seen him win at every level of the field over the course of his career. But like the last 2 years, that thing gets sawed off. All I wanted him to show in Mobile is I can beat people off the line. I can win downfield again. Cause I know that you can, the manufacturer touch stuff. It's a tough one. The price point that the 49ers paid for him, I'm totally fine with that. His separation rates in college were great. Again, you have to give the context the last 2 years. It was the really quick hitting stuff close to the line of scrimmage, but he has those 4.38 wheels. And he does know how to shake people. I just think he had a poor Senior Bowl and coming off the 2 years with the role, the way that they sort of put him into a box in the corner. That was what sort of tempered it for me. But again, this is a player that I like earlier on in his career when he was at UTEP. I friggin' loved the kid. And I thought when he went up to Arizona, he was going to destroy people too. But it was just that weird situation where you happen to be playing with this monster on the other side. So the monster's got to take all the downfield stuff because we got the Kraken and you just have to sort of sit at the kiddie table with the short stuff.
Yeah, that's not ideal. And I think that they'll use him deeper down the field. Brock likes to take shots, man. He takes singles over doubles. So if you've got guys that can run routes and can separate, he'll find you down the field. That's my hope anyway. Let's move on to Renardo Green. Another pick that, you know, some 49er fans loved, some 49er fans didn't. Cooper DeJean, Kool-Aid McKinstry. The Niners decided to go Renardo Green, who was not in anybody's mocks. So obviously everybody hates him. Please help us give a little reassurance to 49er fans.
Well, so the... Renardo ends up going, what, it was 24 slots or so after Cooper, right? Like something like that. Because didn't Coop go 40 and then Green goes 64, right? The last pick of the...
Oh, I'm sorry. Did I have that? I must have flipped that in my mind. You're right. Yeah, the run on backs was earlier. I'm sorry. I flipped that around.
But I do think the contextual point there that you could argue the other way is you had... multiple GMs that noticed the environment that we were in on Thursday night, which manifested itself to the top end of at least the first half of Friday night, which was the historical fluke anomaly of 14 straight offensive players off the board to begin a draft. The most we had ever had prior to that was half of that, seven. And because of this, these defenders that we thought were going to go way higher, were mocked way higher throughout the spring, they get pushed down. And cornerbacks in particular, and It didn't feel like a referendum from the NFL on the case-by-case basis of the evaluations of those players. But again, rather this weird circumstance where it was the two different things going on. You had the four quarterbacks that should have gone that high, and then, in my opinion, and then the two wonky decisions in conjunction with them. So those two wonky decisions, that's two defenders that get pushed down, you know, theoretically just by the numbers. And then the offensive line thing where you had the awesome offensive line guys at the top, particularly at tackle. And then you had the bigger drop off in that position group, which teams, when they were doing their three-dimensional chess math, they were like, we better grab that dude first because the other couple position buckets where we have needs, those positions are deeper. So if you're like projecting out, you know, where could we get the most aggregate combined value of first round pick, second round pick, third round pick. A lot of these teams, when they're doing their simulations, it's like, you know, you're trying to put the different chess pieces together, Tetris pieces or whatever. And it's like, man, in all of our simulations, if we take the offensive lineman earlier, it means that at the other two position buckets that we're going to hit, it would be more advantageous to get those players there. The value is going to be better overall. So even though it, for some of those guys, it may have appeared to be like a slight reach in the moment, it really wasn't when you suss the math out the other way. And again, because of this, the manifestation, you shoved those corners, the overall defenders down the board. Howie Roseman was one of them. He got lucky with Quinyon Mitchell. And then, but the second one, Cooper, falls all the way down to 40. And then he makes that move up. And the Eagles put out their little video, and you see in the war room, and you see Howie, he tries to trade up, and he gets rejected like in those high 30 picks. One of them, the pick right before it was the Panthers. They reject Howie, and then they take the Rams offer instead. And then they were afraid they were going to take Cooper, but then the Rams take Fiske from Florida State. But that was one of them. And then the other smart dude with this was Brad Holmes, reading the cornerback the way that was going. He goes up, trades for Terrion Arnold, and then Enos Rakestraw, who I thought should have gone way above that, he falls down. I think that I guess would be the way to put it. For the 40, the other sort of argument there is in that moment, you know, one of two things: either would you sacrifice Pearsall at the end of the first round, either to try to trade up to beat Howie to the punch for Quinyon Mitchell, or would you go back a little bit? You could have traded down from that spot to, turns out, 38-39. And then gotten Cooper, but then defer the wide receiver need. The wide receivers were a little bit deeper in, into day two, early day three. So those, you know, that's a three-dimensional chess that we're talking about. And I think that's fair to bring up and to discuss. But as far as Renardo Green, I mean, like, it was really hard to pass on Florida State last year. And a big part of the reason, of course, they had Jared Verse and they had Fiske, the aforementioned Fiske. So the pass rush is good, but the cornerbacks were awesome. And Renardo Green obviously fits that. And he has the, not only the play style and the skill with that, but also the athletic testing was proven out by him. So I don't quibble too badly with that one, but I also totally understand the point of someone that's like, read the room. You might have taken Renardo in a, more or less acceptable, or maybe even on, against the consensus board, maybe 10 slots, 50, I would have to look at what it was. Whereas some of those elite ones at the top, you could have actually gotten the sticker price discount on where we thought heading in.
This episode is supported by FX's Clipped, the scandalous story of the 2014 Clippers owner's racist remarks captured on tape and heard around the world. The series charts the tape's impact on a dysfunctional basketball organization striving to win against their reputation as the most cursed team in the league. Starring Lawrence Fishburne, Jackie Weaver, Cleopatra Coleman, and Ed O'Neill. FX's Clipped. Streaming June 4th. Only on Hulu.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial, and with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown, and through adaptable problem solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
Yeah, I always tell people it's like a Rubik's Cube. Every move you make affects another part of the cube. It affects another part of the roster. And you have to figure out, are we better overall with a really good wide receiver and this type of corner? Or would we be a better overall team taking the corner earlier and maybe waiting on the wide receiver? They're the ones that have to do that calculus. I'm not going to try and pretend either way. But I did like some of the things. I love the attitude from Green. The attitude. Like he said in his first media session, like, I went against neighbors. I went against Pearsall. I went against the top guys in this class, and I did pretty damn good. And I was like, dude, that guy sounds like a dog.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, and, again, like that, just go back and watch the Florida State defense last year. It was truly nasty, and what happened at the end of the season happened at the end of the season. We won't get into that and relitigate the college football playoff committee's decision and after the Travis injury and stuff, but it would have been cool to see that defense in a college football playoff type setting. You know, then they ended up playing Florida State, but all the dudes that opted out because it didn't mean anything and yada, yada. Yep. But they had a legitimately nasty defense. And you, again, the pass rush with, and it wasn't just Green. They, you know, they went three across there, including, you know, in the slot, everything like that. So, truly nasty. But yeah, I like that kid's attitude. And I totally agree with him. Like, he did play the best of the best. You know, it's like Quinion Mitchell, he was my cornerback one as well. I like the value that Howie got on that. But I mean, you have to say he played in a predominantly zone system at Toledo in the MAC. The MAC arguably is at this point, I would probably put it, you know, now we're down to the 9 conferences, right? Because we RIP to the Pac-12. But you would put the MAC either 8th or 9th. It would be qualitatively, it would be either between them and Conference USA at this point. Those are the ones that have fallen to the bottom. But Quinion didn't play a ton of top competition. And they had the game against, you know, he got to square off against Marvin Harrison Jr. Once. And, you know, but like predominantly the bulk of his data set, he helped himself at the Senior Bowl. But again, the bulk of his collegiate film when it really, really mattered, not playing the top competition. And Renardo is obviously an example of a guy who it wasn't just playing top competition. He was the dude who was trusted to put the clamps on some of those guys who are going to be NFL stars now for the next decade.
Next up might be one of my favorite picks of the draft. It was the point where every 49er fan exhaled a little bit because they finally went offensive lineman. Let's go Dominic Pooney. I love him. Everything I hear about him, I didn't know who he was before the draft happened, but man, everything I hear about him, everybody loves him.
Including myself, Rob, I was going to show you the thing, but Jayhawk alum, I have Jayhawk stuff all over this room. So I got very up close and boots on the ground with Mr. Dominic Pooney. I was surprised that he fell to where he did, to be honest. He was earlier on he was at the subdivision, but he came up, proved the concept to guard the one season at Kansas in the Big 12. And then last season was at tackle and was tremendous, was one of the better ones in the nation. Now, I think he's going to go. My projection with him was back to guard just because some of the length limitations, stuff like that. But I think he's going to be an awesome one. And I don't know, like, what he did on the field the past couple of years that he gets knocked down to 86. He was 49th on my board, number 2 guard.
Wow.
That I had. Yeah. Especially last season when Kansas got good and then Pooney's out there at left tackle was just extremely impressive. And I think that the game that he has, like I said, I translate it best to guard, but if the 49ers want to try him at right tackle and fail him down the spectrum, I'm fine with that, but he's going to be a very good guard if absolutely nothing else.
I feel like the 49ers drafted a lot of guys with a good short shuttle time. Pooney had a good short shuttle time. What is that? What are they looking for in short shuttle? What does that tell you? And why do you think they focused on these guys that had this time?
Yeah, with the shuttle, it's and that is, by the way, analytically, it's not just like, you know, like supposition without any data. Analytically, for especially when you're talking about the interior offensive lineman, is something where analytically the data correlates with NFL success, right? So like, you know, every one of these position groups, like in my spreadsheet, I have all the different measurements. I have all the different tests that they did. And by position, the ones with the highest correlation to NFL success, by the data I'm talking about, not my supposition, but by the data historically, those are the ones that I put in color codes, you know, to particularly juice them. And the interior offensive line, the ones you're looking at, it's the agility ones. And it's the split because you want them off the line quick. And then you want to make sure that they can move, you know, both in terms of, you know, for instance, slamming the front door on the gap crashing 3 technique or going out to the second level or not getting crossed over by the counter moves, you know, not getting knock-kneed with that. And then, you know, with the splits and then the arm length stuff, it's about, that's just about who gets to lead the first step of the dance, right? Like you get off the line quicker, you have the longer reach, like you're going to touch the guy first and you at least get the slight head start. I mean, from there, then we see, but that's why that sort of stuff is important. But yeah, Pooney had all that stuff. you mentioned the shuttle. The 4-4 flat was, I believe, at least in my data set here, of the guys that I think I had, 65 guards there at the end. He has the best short shuttle time of all of them. So yeah, and the, you know, when you put him into guard, then the wingspan, the arm length, all of a sudden now it's looking good there. You know, and it would be passable at right tackle if they want to try him there. But again, I just think his game translates so well to inside. But you know, to be fair to the kid, he did have a 91 flat PFF pass blocking grade last year. So at right tackle, you know, with some of this stuff, you could give him a shot if you wanted to.
Oh, I'm hoping he can contribute right away. Like I would love to see him be a starter right away. You know, I don't know if the 49ers are going to see it that way, but when I hear you say all that stuff and talk about all that stuff, and considering the Niners had a rotation at right guard last year, like, let's go get him in there.
Put him in right now. He'll start there. They plug that hole right now. Year one.
Oh, beautiful. I love hearing that. All right. I know we're going in order here, but I'm skipping the order because I need you to explain something to me. Cause I'm so excited about Isaac Garendo. He's 6 feet tall. He's 220 plus pounds, and he runs the same 40-yard dash as Michael Vick. What? How is he going so late? Why didn't he produce more in college? I feel like this guy should be a monster.
Yes. You just hit on the million-dollar question. You know, when he went to Wisconsin, the athletic type, the body type, that sort of straight line ethos locomotive, that fit Wisconsin. But of course, the running back room was what it was there. And it, like, Garendo would have been better if, like, in a reality where Braylon Allen wasn't there last year. Now if it's like, how do I put this? From the treetops, he would appear to be the perfect Wisconsin back. However, that with that receiving utility, I think is his best thing. And I think his worst thing, and this is the thing where they're going to have to work on him with. Sometimes handing him the ball, I don't want to say that I'm comparing these two guys, but it's an example of a kind of guy like this from a couple years ago. There was a back who came out of, I believe it was Arizona State. We were talking about Arizona State before, so it was funny. Do you remember Kalen Ballage?
Yes.
Yeah. So during his draft process, you know, everyone is going nuts about the size and the speed and, you know, and stuff. But the problem for me was when I watched his cutups there, when on the specifically the handoff concepts, when he was in space, it was a little bit better. But, you know, he was the straight line guy, but he ran like Mr. Magoo, or like he had drunk goggles on. I constantly just saw him like running full speed into the back of his guard. It's like, bro, like you have so many skills. Like, and with Garendo, it's a weird thing because with Ballage, he got more touches with that in college. And Garendo was deprived it, I think, in part because of the situation initially there at Wisconsin. And then where it appeared to be the right, like, you know why the coaching staff prioritized him in the recruiting. But the way that their system goes, they weren't actually leveraging his skills. So when you're just a Wisconsin coach, and you're like, oh, I want you to run up against these boxes, you know, where our power run stuff. And it's him against Braylon Allen. Well, you're going to probably pick Braylon Allen, although Braylon Allen could use some help with his vision and feel as well. So maybe it was a coaching thing at Wisconsin. But then Garendo goes to Louisville, a one that would be a better fit for his skill set. But you only had that 1 year thing. It was the new coaching staff. They had the holdover in Jordan, and he just ends up getting used situationally there. I like the how can you dislike the size, speed, athleticism combination when you know that the guy has pass game utility? That alone, you could argue, justified the price tag, even if he keeps running like Mr. Magoo behind the line. But again, another guy that found an awesome landing spot, because this is the kind of team where you're going to coach him with that stuff, right? Like, you know, and you hope, right? But if not, he just becomes a very cool situational player, right? Like, let's just say that he is the second coming of Kalen Ballage. Do you think that Shanahan is going to be just like running him into the line, and that's the way that they're going to use him? No, they're going to use that receiving element. And with Garendo, it's find him into open space with some grass in front of him, and yep, he's that friggin' speed locomotive, a straight line, right? I think some of the testing flattered him as far as I was surprised at the agility. I wasn't surprised at all, though, by the straight line. That you see it when he's got the open field in front of him. So I think between the receiving skill that was apparent, that was the thing that he did that he got the shot to do in college. He proved the concept on that. With that athletic profile, you already have the makings of that's your floor right there, which, again, you could argue justifies the cost right there. And then the other stuff you got to work on him with. But fortunately, y'all have the best running back in football. So I don't think he needs to hurry about getting on the field too early on those early downs.
Very true. Maybe they throw him a kick returner. He's one of the guys yes. I'm fascinated to see in preseason. Like, just this freaking monster. Two guys in the last 20 years ran that fast at that weight. One is DK Metcalf. The other is Isaac Correndo. That's stunning.
It's freaky stuff.
So I'm very excited. Hopefully it works out. I did skip over Malik Mustafa. Hard-hitting safety out of Wake Forest.
Yeah, we can just call him the Hitman. They're going to have to teach him a little bit of discipline and that sort of in-the-moment profit calculator of, like, maybe this isn't the time to do the bat out of hell and we're gonna smack someone. But one of the funnest defenders to watch this year. And also, he has that throwback game to, you know, it was like it's like he stepped out of – it's like Encino Man. He's coming from 30 years ago, you know, and now he's flying it. And hopefully he can avoid the flags too, because sometimes he will lay the wood to people, and he doesn't care about throwing his body around. Obviously, that's the entire like ethos of his game.
Can he cover at all, or is he basically going to be an exclusive like down in the box type of safety?
I think, you know, coming forward with the field in front of him, I think the thing you're concerned about is leaving him on an island where it's the back to the quarterback. The part of Mustafa's game that you love, it's the triggering downhill. That's when you see him running the alley and smacking a running back. That's when you see him, quarterback thinks he has a free completion, receiver thinks he has a free completion, and Mustafa screaming down to contest at the catch point and going right through the guy's back and the ball squirting up into the air. It's like that sort of stuff. But what I don't want is like now we're trailing a sleek slot receiver and down the field and he's got to that's the stuff where it's that, you know, it goes the other way. I want him flying downhill and contesting at the catch point, able to see the field in front of him.
Sounds like a very similar player to Talanoa Hufanga, who's coming off an ACL, won't be a free agent in 2025. So I could see the sort of the eyes of the 49ers there. Before I let you go, I did want to talk about one undrafted free agent, because as much as Isaac Arendo is a physical freak, Corey Schrader is like the complete opposite. He's short, he's light, and he is slow as hell. He ran a 4.61 Thor, but then he leads the SEC in rushing. So, like, how is this happening?
Yeah, well, I want to put it, I like his game, and I had him draftable, I think even as a sixth rounder, maybe. I'd have to look at my overall, but like late sixth, early seventh, somewhere in there. I like Schrader's game, and this is coming from, again, as I mentioned earlier, University of Kansas alum, where if anyone is predisposed, easy for me to say, to hate Missouri players, it's this guy. And coming in, you look at him, he's the opposite of the first guy off the bus thing. And so it's like, oh, that's cute, Missouri, you know, but he works his way up to the top of the depth chart. And this past season, like at a certain point, I had to be like, okay, this kid's good. Like, he lacks the upper tier athletic traits, like you mentioned, but the efficiency of the movement, I think is number one that I would say with him. I like his feel as a runner. Maybe he can help out Garendo with some of that stuff. Like I like the tempo that he ran with, you know, in that Missouri system. And then it's the skills, you know, it's the other stuff. It's not the, how would you say it? Not the, the hardware, it's the software, or am I saying that backwards? It's a little early, but you know, like with Garendo, it's the things that you can't teach. With Schrader, he's all the things that he's taught himself, or that, you know, he's grinded up to. And I like the cutting with him. I love the receiving utility. I told you before, like, people were going nuts about Shipley. People love Will Shipley. Cody Schrader for me is pretty close, and they're in the same ilk of what they project to be in the NFL. Now, maybe Schrader, with Shipley, they can say, oh, maybe we get some return utility. You're going to have to be the best returner on your team for that to manifest. Otherwise, it's just the pass catching stuff. And with Schrader, I think that's where you're trying to get him up to, of like, you know, being one of the top 40 guys in the league as far as like a situational guy on that end of it. I liked what I saw on some of that stuff. He didn't get to get used as much of it at Missouri. That was an offensive, their offensive scheme, right? Philosophy, whatever. When we talked to him down in Mobile, he was talking about how he wanted to show that stuff. I was super impressed with it because the same footwork that you see with him behind the line, the efficiency, the cutting with him, it's like it's just the clean angles with everything, you know, and then he's off. There's no futzing around. You saw that along his route path and in Mobile when he got to do that. And he was consistently shaking people and making some plays downfield, both in the one-on-ones and then the team. He was a better receiver down there than some of these other dudes that were piped in that area. So I like him. It's, you know, again, like that's the part of his game that he is going to have to develop to make it on. Because, you know, with the other stuff, I just think you're going to have a better dude to do that. Probably he could handle a little bit for sure. Cause you know, he does grind, but you know, improving on that aspect of it will improve his odds of sticking around. But I was impressed with the kid this year. He can handle the heavy workload for sure. And he is skilled and he has that understanding. He allows the blocks to set up for him. You know, that modulation of tempo, wait. Okay. Someone come block him. I'm going to go around there. Like it's all that he's not in a hurry, right? Like he understands the chess pieces around him. Some of that stuff is harder to test for. The speed is easier to test for, but I like that signing in UDFA by the 49ers.
At Evernorth Health Services, we believe costs shouldn't get in the way of life-changing care, and we're doing everything in our power to make it possible. Behavioral health solutions that also keep your projections at their best? It's possible. Pharmacy benefits that benefit your bottom line? It's possible. Complex specialty care that cares about your ROI? It's possible. Because we're already doing it. All while saving businesses billions. That's Wonder made possible. Learn more at evernorth.com/wonder.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Man, 5'8", I think he is, and 202 pounds. And he runs a 4.61. And I'm like, he's one of the guys I'm most excited to watch. Another guy in the preseason. Like, yes, give me Schrader late in these preseason games, and let's just see him run over some people. So overall, I felt like I understood every pick the 49ers made. I could at least see the vision for it. I didn't have to do a whole bunch of mental gymnastics of like, why did they pick this guy? How's he going to fit? I feel like you could kind of see the plan.
1,000%. Yeah. I totally agree. There was continuity with that. I think the only thing, if people wanted to nitpick, it would just be that three-dimensional chess game at the top of the decision of this position group against that position group. But I will fight anyone that argues against Ricky Pearsall once it was the decision of wide receiver. That love Ricky Pearsall. Ricky Pearsall's a stud, and 49er fans are going to see that. But I agree with you. Overall, there was a plan, a vision that they saw through. And then going into the UDFAs, Schrader is the interesting guy to keep an eye on. And then in terms of my overall metrics, I do the UDFA class rankings every single year, drop them on Fantasy Pros the week after the draft. That's coming out on Monday, but just between us friends, I can give you my metrics on the 49ers. So I had their UDFA class 15th in the NFL overall. Okay. And again, led by Schrader, but you had some interesting dart throws after that. But I think a solid process by the 49ers overall, where it's not, an example of the other way, like the 49ers, it was more like we got the plan. We're not going to try to blast the ball. We're just hitting it down the fairway, right? Like we're already in a great situation. We don't need to do anything crazy. Here's a crazy idea. Let's just pick good football players at some of these position buckets that we needed. And we'll just go from there. We're not going to take the wild chances. An example of a strategy on the other polarity, but a team that was also picking in the 20s in terms of their, I'm pretty sure. The Bengals was a team where every single pick they were shooting the moon, starting with Mims. Jermaine Burton is someone that some teams would not have taken, even with the Mr. Irrelevant. They wouldn't have signed him as UDFA because of some of the personality locker room type things with him, and some things that we even saw on camera. The Tennessee field storming, people haven't seen that. That's what I'm, you know, some of that stuff. But that one, Eric Gall, I was bullish on the tight end, but he has the injury stuff. You know, we'll see on that. But anyway, the Bengals ethos throughout their thing, it was shoot the moon on upside, shoot the moon on upside, shoot the moon on upside. So I think in my grading methodology, I gave the Bengals a C, which again, for me, would be you're literally in the middle of the NFL. Not the worst grade I give out, but literally you're above half the NFL. And then the 49ers, I give a C+, but it's with the opposite ideologies. With the Bengals, it's hard to gauge where the shoot the moon guys are. So like the day after the draft, you know, I can't see into the future. I didn't get the sports almanac from Biff Tannen. So I have to do it that, you know, you split the middle, right? Like with that, the 49ers is C+, but in the exact opposite way of, you know, whereas the Bengals were just, you know, swing from the heels and, you know, whatever, the 49ers were just calmly, they went up, hand me my pitching wedge and, you know, just chipping away towards the hole every single time. It's a different way of doing it, but especially from the catbird seat that the 49ers sit in with their roster situation and how strong the team is and being the perennial contender, this was the correct way to do it. You don't need to shoot for the moon every single pick. You have everything in place. Like, let's just go out and get good football players that we know will contribute, will start, etc.
And I think that was the exact right strategy to go with, especially when they have had so many complete whiffs lately. Trey Sermon, I'm looking at you. Ty Davis Price, I'm looking at you. Danny Gray, I'm looking at you. Pretty much every third round pick you've made that hasn't been Fred Warner, I'm looking at you. So I totally get it by the 49ers, and I hope it works out. Thor, thank you so much. If we want to follow you on X, you are at Thorku, Thorku, and all your work, of course, is on fantasypros.com. I really appreciate the time. Thank you.
Rob, it's always good talking to you, man. Thanks so much. Appreciate you.